Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And we're here to talk about burnout today.
Burnout. It's very real. And I've experienced it. And I know you've experienced it.
I feel like the world is burned out. And I'm honestly, like, on some level, I think I hesitated to talk about this because I was just like, I feel like we've all been I was very like rallied in 2020 to talk about burnout and help people with burnout because I was like, this is a crisis and we're going to get through it. But it's like, we've been burned out for 5 years now and I don't even know what to say anymore.
With no end in sight. Just keeps – the horrors persist, but so do we. That's my new motto. But I think in 2020, like, we hadn't – I mean, obviously, like, there's been global
individual
horrors.
People and stuff like that also like, were experiencing it.
History is filled with nothing but global horrors. But I think what made the pandemic so interesting was it was the first time we went through a global horror of that level, all interconnected through social media.
Yes.
And I think we all just kind of like rallied around that chaos and then it just never stopped.
Right. It's – yeah. No, I think that's such a good point, Sam, because, yeah, it was like – shocking how we all sort of did it together.
Yeah.
And there were good and bad parts of it, but it kept going on. So it like sort of got worse. And we never changed our behavior. We just stayed on.
Yeah. Everything just became catastrophic on the internet.
Yeah.
In any and all directions across the spectrum. So it's been a lot. Yeah. And now it feels like it's gotten worse since – I don't know. I would say January 20th, maybe the 19th, depending on how people felt. But like, regardless, I think it's been a very, very rough couple of months. But anyway, that's at like a larger macro scale.
Well, I think the other thing is that I remember writing this piece of content in 2019 before the pandemic started, which was like, we are not meant to be connected to billions of people.
No, we're not.
Like, our brains are not wired that way. Literally, in evolutionary psychology, there's a concept. It was made up by someone named Dunbar. So there's this – it's called Dunbar's number, where essentially –
I've heard of this.
You probably have.
Yeah.
We are, like, meant to be in contact with a max of 150 people total.
Oh, good God.
So if you look at that and you look at what we're dealing with, it is so different. And I say that also because, again, I said that in 2019 and I'm just like, I don't even know now what to say.
Because there's nothing to say. Yeah. But I think that gives perspective as to why all of this like feels so particularly hard and overwhelming. And I do have a point, I think, that is like related to that. I thought we would get to it like later in the episode, but let's just like dive right in. I find part of the issue, and I think if I remember correctly, I think I've mentioned this maybe in other episodes, but what I find like particularly overwhelming about social media is you're not getting information, you're getting interpretations of information. Something that has been really crucial to me in the last couple of months has been recognizing that there is a very distinct like line that I've needed to draw between like factual based information versus someone's opinion on the information and the opinion, their opinion of what that means or doesn't mean.
Yeah.
And if they are not an expert in that thing.
Yeah.
Right. If they are just the average Joe putting their spin on it. Mm-hmm. I have had to really disconnect from people that share those thoughts because I've noticed it really adds to my anxiety and it adds to like my own sense of paranoia of kind of questioning like, I didn't think of it that way. Like, what don't I understand? Like, oh my God, I didn't think it was that bad. And I have like a very select number of accounts that I now go to for news.
Yeah.
And anybody else, I just kind of blow past because I did really make that realization, and I'm sure a million people have made this before me and since, but that recognition of it's not always like information that you're getting.
Yeah.
Like it's just opinions. It's just a constant flow of opinions, and it's so much. But that
is the problem with the internet, right? Like what comes to me is like what Chapel Roan said on like the Call Her Daddy podcast like a couple weeks ago.
Right.
She said very little.
Very little.
She said like, my friends who are moms seem miserable and no one sleeps and they look dead in their eyes. And honestly, number one, I don't blame her. But even if I did, that's her opinion of her mom, like of her friends who are moms and whatever.
Yeah.
And again, it's like the internet just does what the internet does, which is to, it wasn't even about that. Right. It was about the internet's backlash to it and the backlash to the backlash to the backlash to the backlash. And maybe I contributed because I said I didn't care about the backlash. But so I was adding to the noise. But that's exactly right, Sam. Of it's – we're not just getting data or pieces of information. And sometimes it's because it's very complicated. And if someone just told me – I can't even think of an example. Give me a government example that I probably don't know. Someone did this.
If the president were to implement martial law.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but I think he did implement it, right?
No, he didn't.
Okay. No. People are speculating on it.
People think he's going to, but he's not going to. The Insurrection Act versus martial law are two different things.
Right? People aren't saying that, which is actually a great example because I literally thought that was already happening because I've seen that so much.
No, it's not happening.
So at least
right now in this moment. I don't know what's going to happen.
When this releases.
I don't know what's going to happen in an hour. I don't know. But for right now, we're not under martial law. Yeah. As of this recording on April 14th, we are not under martial law.
But yeah, you don't actually see the data. You see, And I've thought about it a lot as opinions, but just you saying it's their interpretation actually really helped me get a little bit more space from it. Because that's something I do with clients all the time and myself, right? Yes. Like one of the most powerful things you can distinguish for yourself is what happened and what is my interpretation of what happened? What is the story I'm telling myself that happened? Like we got one negative comment on our episode and the story I made up to walk everyone through this, the story I made up is that we were doing a bad job and the positive things we were doing was outweighing the negatives. And I asked people to leave us a review and only a negative person left us a review. Yeah. And maybe we should just give up. Thankfully, I have you and, you know, you are the expert at walking me back off the ledge. But that's not what happened, right? That was my interpretation.
Right. I feel like the system right now that we are living in, I think at all levels is like rigged for burnout. Mm. And I think it's why like there really wasn't any other place for us to start other than I think the macro, because I think just calling attention to the fact that it is so disastrously messy and uncertain right now, which is adding to all of it. And I think a lot of the stability that felt so guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like I think particularly for those of us that are living in the United States, I know we actually have quite a few international listeners. So if you guys feel the same, this is obviously for you too. But I think for those of us living in the United States, I think there we have very much taken for granted how lucky we have been over the last 248 years that this hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Meaning having somebody that's coming in and really trying to push the boundaries of executive power and seeing how far they can go and you know, this person that is really like trying to fundamentally change the way we do things. And I think in the United States specifically, speaking with my clients, seeing followers who are asking me questions and DMing me and just in my personal life, I think that's what's causing so much overwhelm at a baseline. Mm-hmm. Then you add in everybody else's individual circumstances of things that are happening in their life. And it's just like, it's just a lot. Like it's all a lot right now. And this era of time that we're in is overwhelming.
No, I think that's such a good point too, Sam, because I think one thing I'm realizing also is that I used to not question whether courts – I mean, you know, we started seeing the degradation of the Supreme Court, you know, a few years ago.
2022, yeah.
Right, but like, you know, literally waking up every day and being like, what is going to, you know, actually happen and will these – it's like watching, you know – a train coming off the tracks and praying to God that the guardrails will hold.
Yeah.
Where I used to just complain about the train being late to where I wanted it to go.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And that is different, waking up and literally being like, is this going to be okay? Are the guardrails holding? Is a different level of having to think like more deeply.
Yes. Yeah. Having to be like really considerate of your life.
Yeah.
With that said, we wanted to share like our personal mm-hmm. anecdotes of how we've managed different seasons of burnout mm-hmm. in our lives. And then we were going to get to some of your questions.
Yeah.
As well. So we went really big. Now we're narrowing it down.
Yeah.
So Amanda, would you like to go first?
Sure. So I've had different periods of my life mm-hmm. of being burned out for yeah. sure. I think I'm still trying to figure out what the right balance is. And I think one thing that people really misunderstand about burnout is it's not finite. Mm. Like our needs, our energy, our availability, what's on our plate really changes season to season. And that I think is something that is very chronically not identified as part of burnout. Mm. Where, you know, if something personal is going on in your life, like in my current season of life, my mom is undergoing like chemo and has very serious cancer. So my like emotional availability is like very different. Yeah. So I'm very mindful of what that capacity looks like. And very mindful of like what drains me in that capacity compared to I have a lot because I'm so like fragile, like emotionally right now. I have a lot of capacity to do more like mindless, I think, things. Maybe I'm getting too granular in this, but I think my recommendation and what I do is I really try to look at my life in different buckets of what are the different things that fill me up and drain me. If we look at it like emotionally, if you look at, you know, if you're a parent, what kind of child responsibilities do you have? What phase of parenting are you in? Because some are much more intense than others. Obviously, if you have, depending on whether you're single or whether you're partnered, that's going to impact. Dating is something that really drains people's batteries. If you've moved, if you're having to make new friends, if you've gotten a new job, like change is something that really, really burns us out or uses our capacity. Essentially, burnout is you've overused your capacity. Like one of my favorite quotes about burnout is stealing from tomorrow to be able to be okay with today. Whoa. Until you have none left.
It is officially summer, and I have an incredibly controversial opinion, which is I actually don't love summer. There are elements of summer that I enjoy. There are elements of summer that I like. I don't like summer, and that is because I would rather be cold than hot all the time. There's nothing worse to me than being hot. And sleeping hot is even worse. And since I am a solution-focused person, I am constantly thinking of what I can do to alleviate this problem and make it better for me because it is so uncomfortable for me to be hot when I sleep. And one of the solutions that I have found is twofold. It is the Cozy Earth Bamboo Sheet Set and the Cozy Earth Bamboo Pajamas. When I tell you that these things have changed my life and made summer heat and the summer season that much more enjoyable, I cannot speak more highly to it. The material is so breathable. It is so comfortable. It feels like you are wrapped in a cloud while feeling like you are remaining cool at the same time. I don't know how to describe it. You're just going to have to try it. Truly, they are incredible. And one of the things that I absolutely love about this brand is that their clothing carries a lifetime warranty. Any piece of clothing that you buy, lifetime warranty, you can return it anytime, get a replacement. Their bedding has a 10-year warranty. 10 years on your bedding. That is crazy. And it just speaks to how much they trust the quality of their product. Treat yourself to the cool, easy comfort your summer nights have been missing. Head to cozyearth.com and use my code NUANCEBOGO, that's NUANCEBOGO, to buy one, get one free. Did you hear me? They are doing buy one, get one free right now. Mix and match across sheets, pajamas, and towels. That's code NUANCEBOGO, NUANCEBOGO, at cozyearth.com for buy one, get one free. And if you see a post-purchase survey, please feel free to mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here.
I don't know if anyone's seen The Substance. I know you haven't. It's a very intense movie that I honestly don't even recommend anyone seeing. But the basic premise of The Substance actually is this in a different way of there's like Demi Moore and then she births a younger version of herself and they both have to share consciousness and they have to switch every 7 days. And the younger version of herself like steals from the older version of herself to stay conscious for more days. And then it negatively impacts Demi Moore and she starts to loses her hair. She like gets more wrinkles. She literally loses her life force because it's being stolen from. So it is kind of this interesting metaphor of you are sort of stealing your future life source to be okay today.
Well, everything has a cost.
Yes.
Everything that you do has a cost. Whether that is a withdrawal or a deposit,
yes,
changes.
Definitely.
And I love that you brought up the idea of buckets because something that I've been chatting about with a lot of people is this idea of you only have so much to give, going back to like the finite point.
Yeah.
And where we like can really trip ourselves up is when we assume every bucket has to be at 100% all of the time. And part of being realistic with ourselves and part of caring for ourselves is doing exactly like you said and like laying out all of those buckets and being brutally honest about where you are really needed.
Yeah.
And where are the areas that you can pull back from in order to be more present in those areas where you're really needed.
Yeah.
And obviously like that ebbs and flows depending on the level of crisis that you're in, right? For you.
Yeah.
This is pretty crisis. And so you've had to be ruthless in your energy and your time and where that goes.
Yeah.
And that's the season that you're in. Mm-hmm. And I think for you listening, I know that that feels almost like identity triggering in some ways to have to say like, oh, I can't give it all the time in the exact way that I want to. There has to be a moment where you recognize your humanness.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that is one of the most difficult things about burnout is, you know, people who are more on the perfectionist side, high achievers, they get their whole worth from what they do. Not being able to do enough is like devastating and absolutely causes a crisis of identity.
Yeah. It's a hard process to go through, especially if you haven't been in a position in your life where you've had to make those decisions before, where it's kind of felt like you've been able to kind of give fairly evenly.
Yeah.
And so then when something happens that does throw you off, it feels really confusing and alarming.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is sort of how burnout happens is one day or one time you really realize like you actually hit up against like the limits of your humanity of really things start to break down, whether cognitively you don't remember things in the same way or physically your body starts getting sick all the time, whether you can't sleep, whether, you know, all of those things. And I think what's really hard about burnout is it can really quickly become this like downward spiral, right? We feel out of control from how much we're not able to do. So then we like promise that we'll do more, or then we stop taking care of ourselves because that's what we cut sort of as like, well, I just don't need to sleep. I don't need to take breaks for lunch. I don't need to do this. I don't need to do that. And we don't realize that those are the things that are actually the few things that are filling us up, that are keeping us afloat. And when those things get cut, we go down.
Well, and the phrase that I have that kind of encompasses that idea is like the poison is the medicine.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people, and this is speaking as someone who has seen it that way. I have, you know, at times in my life when things have been really chaotic, all of that feels like it takes so much time.
Yeah.
So much more time than what we have. And so it does. It kind of feels like poison. It's like, well, if I do that, I'm going to be more tired. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. No, no, no. That is, in fact, the medicine. That is the medicine that gives you the floaties to keep floating for forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's noticeable when you stop doing those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really hard with burnout too, because it's like, you know, it's not a diagnosis. It's really so individual per person. It doesn't have a clear what to do. And it also doesn't have, you don't have any understanding of like when you will be back to normal. It is like kind of this big ambiguous injury that you know, you have to kind of sort of muddle your way through. And I do, and I think what's hard too is a lot of times once your capacity, like I think of it sometimes as once I've fully burned out and I've kind of like, I have a negative bank account, so to speak, it takes a long time to get just back to zero. Compared to, it's much easier if you're staying around 10 or 20% to add into that to get more. It's like when I was in my addiction, I used to regularly run out of gasoline in my car.
You were one of those.
I was one of those people. And it's because your car has a certain amount of miles it can drive on zero. So the gas tank says zero, but you can tell yourself I still have 20 miles. But the problem is you can't track that when it goes to zero.
No.
So you think that you have more time, but you're not paying attention to how much you're driving, and then you run out of gas.
I too have played that game. So I can't.
Surprising to me, Sam.
I can't quite figure it. Well, I would know like how far I had to go, like when I hit zero.
Me too.
Okay, like
and then each car was different also because I've run out of gas in multiple cars.
Oh, I didn't do it in multiple cars, but yeah, I would do it in my car. I never lost, but I have since stopped playing that game.
Yeah,
because I did break down on the side of the freeway like 2 years ago, and I had a full blown panic attack, and I got so freaked out. Well, because I was driving home from the hospital, so it was like midnight. I was on the freeway. There was like barely a like shoulder to be on. And my battery essentially died while I was driving.
Oh, my God.
And so my lights were starting to die. So, like, my the flashers, like the emergency, whatever, they were starting to die. And I got so freaked out. I called the police twice. The first time I was like, can you come get me? And they were like, okay, yeah, we'll send someone to you. And then, like, 10 minutes go by.
They did.
And I wasn't seeing anybody. Mm. So I called them again. And I was like, are they on their way? Like, I'm just really scared.
I can't believe they came for you.
Yeah. He came and he jumped my car. He had like a battery pack.
Wow.
Basically because I woke my dad up at 2 a.m. crying as a 33-year-old grown woman. And I was like, Dad, what do I do? And he was like, I'll call the cops. And then I'm like, okay. But we're okay now. So speaking of breaking down.
Yeah.
I broke down.
Yeah. Tell us.
After the hospital. Well, before. Way before. And for my dear coworkers who are listening to this, y'all are the real ones. You saved my life. That job was like really, really hard for me. And I spent a lot of time trying to justify why it wasn't. And it took a big toll on me. And one day we will do, I'll do the tell-all, if you will, episode where I'll really get into it. But there were so many factors that went into the struggles that I had with that job.
Yeah.
It was not, the death and dying was a massive component of it. Yeah. And the demands and the acuity of the patients were a huge part. But there were a lot of systemic issues. And a lot of the doctors that I worked with were just dicks.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them were really, really rude and belittling and demeaning. And I have names. I'm not going to name them. But there are like four that stand out in my mind of people that made life really difficult and weren't fun and weren't enjoyable. And something that was really hard is I felt – and I stand on this to this day, and I tried really hard to advocate for this while I was there, but the needle didn't move. Mm-hmm. I felt that our position as clinicians, master's level trained clinicians, was in no way respected as a clinical role.
Yeah.
We kind of, our team was like the dump all for everything that people didn't know what to do with. And people would be like, can you get this person a cab? Can you get this person a bus? Like, just these things that weren't clinical roles, but we had all taken on because therapists and social workers are really bad with boundaries.
Yep.
And we're like, I just want to help people. And I realized like, no, I actually don't care about helping this person because they won't help themselves. Mm-hmm. And they've been in here six times and the conversation hasn't changed. The resources haven't changed. Why am I meeting with this person again? And why are we validating why they're coming to the ED over and over and over again without doing anything to take advantage of what's available to them?
Yeah.
And I would say that, and it was kind of this like, oh my God, you're so rude, like type thing. So like combine all of that like systemic stuff with watching people die.
Yeah.
And telling people that their loved one had died.
Yeah.
And like some of the worst moments for me would be when the patient had died before the family got there.
Ooh, yeah.
And my job was I would have to go out to the lobby and like say, oh, are you here for so-and-so? And they'd be like, yeah. And I'd be like, okay, like follow me back. The doctor would like to chat with you. And I would like bring them back to the room. And the interesting thing is like even now, like talking about it, like I can feel my stomach like getting tight, like remembering that like there were a couple of situations where in my mind I knew like it's every death is devastating.
Yeah.
Every death is devastating. But there were some that I knew were just given the situations were like particularly brutal.
Yeah.
I would just like, I remember like walking back and being like, this is the last time they will feel normal. And I would be in the room when they found out some of the doctors who sometimes were residents weren't very good at it. And, you know, sometimes we would have to like essentially like translate or kind of like guide the doctor through it. Or, you know, we would end up like helping kind of think of questions that maybe the family wasn't thinking of in the moment or trying to understand things, whatever. And literally like the physicians would leave.
Yeah.
They were in the room for maybe like 30 seconds to a minute. And then they're gone.
Yeah.
And it was up to us to like pick up the mess.
Yeah.
And I just got so tired of feeling like I had no control over what my role was. I was at the beck and call of all of these physicians, and some of whom didn't care to understand what my role was or be supportive of what my role was. And the moment that like, there's a moment that like really broke me. And it was a couple months. No, it was a little bit before that. It was probably like 6 or 7 months before I ended up leaving. There was a woman who had passed away in childbirth. And I ended up being the one to tell all of her kids that she was dead.
Oh my God.
And everybody that I thought was going to be there staff-wise to support me just left the room because it was such an emotional and heavy case. And nobody really wanted to touch it. And I kind of ended up getting dragged into it. And it was this whole thing. And the six-year-old grabbed my face and said, you're lying.
Oh, gosh.
And it was just those moments. And I was watching each of the kids like process it differently and having like the perspective of like the trajectory of like how this was probably going to impact them long term. Yes. And being so afraid that their dad wasn't going to be able to handle it. And he was he was a wonderful, wonderful man. And he was very, very kind. And, it, you know, they did have a lot of support. But it was just so – it was so much.
Yeah.
And I remember I got home from work that night. And I literally laid down in my living room. No one was home. I was home by myself. And I literally, like, laid down on the floor. And I realized, like, the emotional toll that this job had taken on me.
Yeah.
And I realized like I had nothing left to give for my own life.
Yeah.
And thank God for the team that I had who were so supportive and knew what I had just done. And there was kind of a joke for a little while that I had the black cloud. So we would like bestow that title on the person who was getting like the worst types of cases.
Yeah.
And that was me for like a really long time. And it like – it just fried me emotionally. Yeah. I was so bitter. I was so resentful. I hated myself for even getting into this field. I was so unhappy. Mm-hmm. And in the background, I was doing all of these things to try to leave the job. But at the mm-hmm. time, it felt like nothing was working.
Yeah.
Which was adding to like the heaviness and the frustration and kind yeah. of the sense of feeling stuck. And I remember in that moment being like, I have to go. Like, there's no other option. Like, I cannot do this for another year. I was like, yeah. I am leaving within yeah. the next year. And I ended up leaving in September of that year. And it took me a year mm-hmm. to like emotionally recoup yeah. from that, because I just gave and gave and gave. And for the first part of that job, I really had kind of told myself that like, oh, well, it's different because it's not my grief, mm-hmm. right? It's not my pain. It's not my this, which mm-hmm. true to a point. That is why you are able with your skills to kind of figure out how to manage that, because it's not your grief. It's not the loved one that you've lost. But seeing that over and over mm-hmm. and over and over again and being a part of that and propping somebody up mm-hmm. while they're deciding to end treatment
yeah.
or pull the plug, sometimes on their child, mm. on their spouse, like, and I'm literally standing there, like holding them, and people are holding on to me. And it's just, I was at bedside when they would say goodbye, and you're going in and out of the room and you're seeing mm-hmm. bodies all the time. And it's just like a different world.
Yeah.
And I realized that I had taken such poor care of myself. Mm. And I thought I was taking care of myself, mm-hmm. but I really wasn't. Yeah. What I was doing was I was like avoiding.
Yeah.
And so when I left, I had to do like a complete recalibration
yeah.
of how I prioritized my time, what taking care of myself looked like,
yeah.
what quiet time and recharge time actually mm-hmm. looked like. And it's still like – it still impacts me today mm-hmm. in some ways. Like I find myself sometimes like if someone needs something from me mm. or has like a request, I find myself kind of immediately like, no, I've done enough. Mm-hmm. And I've had to really like check that and be yeah. like, no, like I actually want to be helpful yeah. to people.
Yeah.
I just gave too much for yeah. too long.
Yeah.
And because of the system I was in, I wasn't allowed to be boundaried.
Mm. Yeah.
That was part of the problem, yeah. which by the way, the last 2 months I was there, I was a nightmare. The doctors would be like, do you want to, can you go see Dave? And I would be like, no. I was so bad. Like yeah. I was done.
Yeah. We wanted to share really quickly that we have officially launched a Substack.
It's called Nuance Needed. We got really creative with the title. Yeah, we're just going to be posting all of our behind the scenes stuff there. We're going to have bonus episodes. I'm doing a lot of my longer pep talks on there, at least 2 a month.
And you also don't have to pay, like you can pay to get that extra content, but we also are excited to just create community with you all. And
yes.
we've gotten into really cool discussions with listeners based on what they think. So we'd love to chat with you more.
Yeah, we know people are really lonely right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that we really have always, Amanda and I have both always dreamed about doing is having more of a community, mm-hmm. a community of like-minded people where we can chat about things in depth and really get curious about what things mean and how we can apply it to ourselves individually. And that is really what we want our Substack to be. And us sharing the information and the tools and the insights that you guys need in order to be able to have those more nuanced, educated conversations.
Absolutely. So join us at nuanceneeded.substack.com and we'd love to see you there. Well, but I think like that is like you're pointing to also, right? Obviously, there's like way more higher burnout
right.
rates in you know, helping professions yeah. and stuff. Yep. But I just thought of like that is like the nurse that works in the ER for like 30 years. She has nothing left.
Nothing left. And when they – like, okay, also, if you want to know what my job was,
yeah.
watch The Pit.
Mm.
Watch The Pit on Max.
Yeah.
that is like the most accurate representation to what I did that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you see the burnout in these people.
Yeah.
And you see how they feel about things and you see how they respond to things and you see the toll that it takes on them. And in our profession as well, it's heavy, especially for people that are in community mental health and have like 35 clients a week, some of whom are severely pervasively mentally ill. So those would be individuals with like manic bipolar, schizophrenia, psychosis, like these very intense, heavy disorders.
Yeah.
People with like a litany of social concerns that they don't have managed. And so like you add years and years and years of that. And if you don't know how to actually take care of yourself, it's a very slippery slope to something that's really unfortunate. And moving for me, it was interesting earlier when you brought up this idea of like moving is like really hard and stressful. For me, that was what I needed to like formally start my life over. Like after living through that for 5.5 years. And sometimes I have to check myself because sometimes I'm like, you're being so dramatic. Like it was a job. But it wasn't at the same time. Like that wasn't just like – it wasn't just an office job.
No.
It wasn't just a standard office job. And leaving – obviously like it was a year between when I left the job to when I moved out of Utah and moved to Florida. But I found that like the change of scenery, the newness, the freshness, the new friendships, all of that for me was like the huge burst of energy that I didn't realize I needed.
Yeah.
Like I needed to cut out all of that old energy and just kind of be like, I gotta start over. Like I have to rebuild in the place that didn't break me.
But I think that's a really good point because it is circling around what we've been saying of – sometimes too, like when it's really hard and when you're super burned out, you just want to cut everything out of your life.
Right.
And you sometimes have to take some like opposite action and actually recognize that even, you know, maybe you don't have enough time right now to make new friends. Like that is, you know, a big ask or maybe it's not right for you to date right now or something like that. But, you know, investing in those current relationships you have and really being clear about which relationships deplete you, which energize you, what projects at work deplete you, which energize you, what things can you do with your children that energize you versus deplete you. And I really think that is such a huge like key to wellness that people don't talk about. And I think about it so automatically because when I was getting into recovery, everything was referred to as like a recovery bank account of like what is like filling up your recovery and what is draining it. And for people to understand what I mean by this, it would be like going to a meeting is, you know, depositing money in your bank account and, you know, seeing someone drinking on the street or, you know, running into someone at a bar that you know or seeing an advertisement, right, might be depleting. And the whole point is we don't always have control.
Right.
Over what's going to deplete us. Just like with you at work, you didn't always have control over what kind of day or week you were going to have. So you have to sort of preemptively fill yourself up to be ready for these like changes that might happen.
Yeah. There what was like a huge boost to me as well, like when I immediately left was just officially doing like private practice full time.
Yeah.
And having control over like what I did or did not do, having control over my schedule and like making that switch was like monumental to me being able to like find the time to emotionally recover. But then also the second that I left is also when my dad got diagnosed with cancer. So that's kind of why like when I talk about the move, I ended up having to kind of do this big thing that allowed me to start over in a lot of ways because I immediately went from one really like chaotic, traumatic work situation to a dramatic, chaotic personal situation. And so there wasn't a lot of time for me to like recoup the emotion because I was giving so much like this personal situation with my family and all that. But yeah, I've really since that simmered I've really committed to allowing myself space to like rediscover what nurturing and caring for myself actually looks like.
Yeah.
And realizing that recovering from something that is really difficult and really challenging takes time.
Yeah.
And that's not a weakness on my end. I didn't do it wrong. It wasn't that I wasn't good at it. It was that I went through something really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And it's going to take me time to like recover and identify the different triggers and different things and figure out what the boundaries are and how wasn't I taking care of myself in more of the granular level. And then, you know, what does that look like moving forward? So like, I know that that's like kind of a crisis-y situation, but I hope if you're listening, you can think of your own life and maybe think of like a season or something that you went through that feels kind of similar to that. And like, if you feel that in some ways you're still digging through it, you're not doing it wrong. Like, you're just giving yourself the time and space that you didn't have while you were going through the situation, and you're giving it to yourself now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think about, right, like I, the last time I really experienced burnout was last year when I was doing the podcast by myself. Yeah. And I remember you and I were talking about potentially starting a podcast and I had to keep being like, I can't yet. I'm still really burned out. I don't have anything to say. And, you know, I mean, that was a bunch of things. I had birth trauma. I, you know, had a bunch of things happen at work. I had just written like two books back to back. And then I tried to do this podcast by myself and it was so much work for me to do by myself. And just like it was draining work too. Like a lot of times with us when I'm feeling like I have a lot on my plate or things like that, I feel like, ugh, I can't believe we have to like record again, you know. And then the second we start talking, I'm like energized from our conversations and I always leave feeling good. And that is a big piece also of burnout. And really I was thinking because a lot of people were asking us about job questions and we've been talking about it, but like there are positive factors that help prevent burnout. And one of them that you were saying, Sam, is like flexibility, like just your ability to set boundaries, your ability to change your schedule because it allows us to adapt to different needs going on in our life.
In your personal life.
Exactly.
Right.
Like autonomy and control over work is a really big one when we feel like we don't have power to make decisions about our lives, it contributes to burnout. And I think it's fascinating to think about it in terms of just these factors that aren't even the amount of hours you're doing necessarily can help with burnout is so interesting. Meaningful work, being aligned, that is so – it's kind of like what I just said, like if you feel energized sometimes from your work. But it's also good to have balance in your work. I mean, some people who wrote in asked us, they said they were therapists. And I think that's one of my – you know, it's not always possible, but varying your caseload of different types of clients you see. You know, like I know when I was doing a lot of client-facing work, only seeing certain – you know, I really did a lot of work on like intense substance use and eating disorders and – having a variety on your caseload of people and different things can help, or being able to do different things at work. Like if you're a teacher, like I've worked with, you know, clients sometimes who end up in a more managerial role or can they do other projects? Being able to pivot and create variety in your work is also a really big positive factor.
My advice would be like if you feel that you are feeling this with work, which I think a lot of the people that I work with or feeling the same way. I think something that can feel daunting, I think, is thinking of all the options available. But I sometimes, when I was like in the thick of it, of knowing I wanted to leave, but it wasn't, the situation wasn't right yet for me to feel comfortable to like make that official jump. What helped me was keeping every available option on the table. Like that I knew there were outs. I knew there were things that I could do, but I was choosing to stay.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't because I had to, or it wasn't because like there was nothing else. It was because it worked. As difficult and trying as it was, it worked. But I knew there were other things that I could do.
Yeah.
I knew in that last year or so that I had the job, I had to like make the commitment to myself of like, I could leave. Mm-hmm. Like, you could leave and you could figure it out. You're choosing mm-hmm. to do that because the stability that it brings to your life, mm-hmm. financially and with benefits and those sorts of things, is helpful to your other stressors right
now. Yeah.
Right? And so also, like, transitioning to private practice, I do, like, vary my days. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I kind of change around, like, my clients who are you know, if I know that we're working on some heavier things and I know it's yeah. going to require, like, a lot of energy and intention from mm-hmm. me, I try to have some ones that are doing okay. And we're yeah. doing, like, some more check-ins or reflective work and mm-hmm. Or maintenance work, right? Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to take care of yourself in that way. You don't have to load up, like, the clients that are struggling the most all first thing Monday morning. Like,
yeah.
you know, you're allowed to vary. And I think also taking time off.
Yeah.
Taking your time off. The yeah. like benefits that you have and taking yeah. advantage of that. Don't be afraid of doing that.
Yeah. I think too, as I'm talking about this, and this isn't a specific question that someone brought up, but I'm just like, it is so wild how women are so much more burnt out than men.
So, oh my God.
Right. And when we think about teachers, therapists, social workers, nurses,
doctors.
Other caring professions. Mm-hmm. But even I was thinking about with the doctor who, like, the doctor leaves and you're doing yeah. right. And part of that was your job, obviously. But right. I think so often it is like, well, you know, women are really good at the emotional mm-hmm. stuff and mm-hmm. I'm not. And it's like, you know, mothers, like, women are just the default, and it makes me very angry. All right. If you're listening to this and feeling like something is landing, like you keep hearing yourself in what Sam and I are talking about, I want you to pay attention to that, because when that happens, it's not a coincidence. And if you've been thinking about therapy, but you've really had not great luck, you want someone who gets it, not just clinically, but personally, I want to share with you about my practice, Therapy for Women Center. All of our therapists have actually been through the things we treat, whether that's trauma, anxiety, eating disorders, parenthood. When you're sitting there and talking about hard things, you know that the person on the other side really gets it. That's really why I started my practice, because I was sick of going to therapists who didn't fully understand the things that they were treating. At this point, we have over 30 therapists, and we actually hand match you to the right one based on what you're going through. And if we don't get the match right, we'll waive your intake fee and help you switch to another therapist in the practice. We really feel like finding the right therapist shouldn't feel like another thing to white knuckle through. When you reach out to us, you can talk to our intake coordinator, you can email us, you can text us. We'd love to hear from you. We serve 42 states online, in person in the Philadelphia area, but right now we have immediate openings in North Carolina, Arizona, Florida, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, South Carolina, Ohio. We'd love to support you if you're looking for a new therapist. Reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com. Or you can text us at 215-847-6749. And let's get into the questions. So a lot of them were about jobs, obviously. But I think a really interesting thread that people kept saying is, do I need a vacation or do I need a new job? What do you think, Sam? How do you discover that answer? I would say take a vacation. If you still hate your job, maybe you need a new job.
If you – yeah. Like, you have to do the thing to know if that is the solution mm-hmm. or if that is the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
Because I know I got to a space where the time off was the Band-Aid. Mm. And I knew, like, even if I had had – a relaxing, restful time away, mm-hmm. it felt like I only made up 5%
yeah.
when I got back yeah. to work. And it felt like that would go away, like, really quickly yeah. when I got back into the grind of mm-hmm. it. I think if you're wanting to take the vacation, just take the vacation. Yeah. And if you come back and you feel better and you feel more rested, more hopeful, more, like, grounded mm-hmm. in your perspective and your approach, then you just needed some time mm-hmm. away and you needed a break. If you come back And even if you had like the best vacation mm-hmm. of your life, this if the second you get back to work, you feel the same as you did when you left, it's the job. Yeah.
I think also on that note, as someone who can be impulsive, I think it's helpful mm-hmm. to like really check in with yourself of, is this a current situational issue at work? Is this like I don't like what I'm, you know, I don't like the current project I'm on. Do I not like the, you know, my current caseload or the people that I'm working
with? My team.
Yeah. Is this something that can change in the future? Yes. Are there opportunities for growth? Are there opportunities to move laterally? Are there opportunities to just do something different? Or is this really what, like, all there is, sort of? And I think thinking out those options, because one thing that I, right, if we're talking about fight, flight, or freeze, I am more of like a runner. Mm-hmm. When things get hard, I'm like, pull the plug, be done, I'm off. That is like my default response. But I know that about myself, and I think that's a really helpful thing to know. But one thing that I try to do a lot is recognize my first thought about something is not really my intuition. Like my first thought as a result of stress is typically anxiety or fear. And I really am a believer in like intuition or knowing or whatever you want to call it is more quiet. It is more still. It is patient. If you feel like you are going to change your mind if you don't do it right now, it is probably your intuition. And I'm not talking about it as like you're working up the courage that you've been thinking about quitting your job for a while and you need to like push yourself over that line.
Yeah.
I'm just saying if you have like a lot of just impulsive thoughts about whenever something is like bad, you're going to just leave or quit or get a new job or something like that, that might be time for some reflection of, as you would say, Sam, how am I contributing to this dynamic? It doesn't mean even that you need to stay in that job. Like you, your contribution to the dynamic might be that you keep picking jobs that don't work for you, or you're not being realistic, or you're overcommitting, or whatever it is. But that's where you can find some agency.
Yeah. I think something that was crucial to giving me a longer battery life was kind of like what I said earlier was this idea of I was choosing it. I think that was like an empowering reframe for me to realize that like I was choosing to stay while trying to find other options, while trying to explore how other things could work, while building up my private practice caseload, you know, like doing all those things. And, you know, like you said, part of this is spending time getting to know you. Like what – you have to get really specific if we're talking about like a job, which I think is kind of the more like traditional form of burnout. If you're talking about a job, you need to get like crystal clear on where you're at, what you need. What is this job lacking? What does this job have that's working, right? Like, is it the career? You know, and that opens up like a broader question, because I know a big thing for me was when I was like knee deep in the hospital, I was like, I have done everything in my life wrong.
Yeah, you're like,
I
literally was looking up how to
– literally, I was like looking up law schools. I was like, I can go to Harvard Law. Like, one of like my best friends, her husband, he's in the Ivy system. And at the time he was based at Yale. And I was like, I could have gone to Yale. Like I was visiting her, walking around campus. And I was like, I could have gotten in here. Like these stupid kids. Like if my brother hadn't been disabled and my parents didn't need so much, like I would have gotten in. You know, like it was the whole thing, guys. It was, don't worry. I had help while I was going through this. But no, like what I realized was it wasn't that I hated my career. I hated what I was doing within it. And I noticed when I got to private practice and I was able to have more of that autonomy and I was able to choose like the people that I work with and have more of like a longstanding professional relationship with them, things felt much brighter and much more hopeful. And also I moved to a company that actually cared about me. Like Therapy for Women cared about me. Intermountain Health did not care about me. And I say that very confidently. And I think for the job, you just have to spend some time getting in touch with you again and making those lists, write it all out, leave nothing off the, on yeah. the table. Like just put everything out there, all of your thoughts. And then from there, you can kind of start to make sense of, okay, do I just need time away? Do I need to start looking for other mm-hmm. jobs? Are there people that I can rely mm-hmm. on, right? Like what you were kind of talking about earlier with this idea of like making changes, I kind of address it as it's either cosmetic or structural.
Say more about that.
Right? Like for me, there were cosmetic things I could have done to maybe buy myself more time. I could have structured my schedule a little differently. Mm-hmm. I could have moved down in hours. I could have been more picky about who I worked mm-hmm. with because that made a big yeah. difference. You know, those were kind of like these cosmetic elements that are low-hanging yeah. fruit to actually change yeah. and make different pretty yeah. quickly. Structural is often when we're talking about the system that you're working in. So like not getting pay yeah. raises, even though they promised yeah. it to us. Not being able to change the inherent requirements of the yeah. job. Not being able to change where I fell on the spectrum of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like respect, yeah. Yeah. really. In the emergency yeah. room. Those are things that I can't change. Mm-hmm. And if I can't live within the structural while making cosmetic changes, yeah. that's where you start to realize, like, I can't live in this system.
That is such a good way to explain it, Sam. I love that. I think that's going to help a lot of people understand, like, is this, you know, is this my job or is this me? And mm-hmm. can I – because a lot of people asked, how do I recover from burnout while still showing up to work?
Well, in relation to that, I think the cosmetic could also be, do you need to change your routine? Right. Mm. Do you need a much more distinct morning routine and nighttime yep. routine? Do you need to be asking for more help from people in your personal life to help carry you through some yep. things? Do you need to be seeing a therapist yeah. more often? Are you seeing your therapist right now every other week or once a month? And maybe you need to button down and see him once yeah. a week. Like those are cosmetic things that you have the immediate control over to try to do something to change. Yeah. And if you're like changing the furniture and you're painting mm-hmm. and you're hanging up new pictures and you're like, I hate everything about this yeah. place. Then that's
like, yeah,
there's kind of more of your answer.
Yeah, like especially I think if it's like to add on, I think other structural changes to it, if it's like not values aligned for you.
Yes.
Yes. Like I think that's a really big one too, because it mm-hmm. is draining to, or like if you can't be authentic or be yourself, that's going to add right. a layer of having to pretend is going to be draining. Right. So yeah, but I think some of those low hanging fruit, like you said, are lifelines that you can use. If you mm-hmm. aren't able to quit your job, or if you're not ready right. to, or you don't know yet. And I think mm-hmm. it goes back to what we were talking about in the first episode of this part one of right, like getting really ruthless and really clear about what are the yeah. aspects of your life that are being drained and where are you getting positive things filling you up
yeah.
from? Like, yeah. can you go on a walk every day, even though you don't have 5 minutes to do it, but you know that that is time, even though you feel like you don't have time, that actually gives you back tenfold, for example.
Right.
Or even like, you know, can you, I think about, like, I think it's really hard because when you're a parent, your capacity and flexibility diminishes so much that it can put a lot more, like, it can make your job a lot more stressful and more difficult. Like when you're dealing with daycare sickness or not sleeping, right? All of these things, it can reveal cracks that were already there maybe in your job
right.
issues. Or especially I think a huge thing too is like uneven, like, you know, division of mental labor and emotional labor in the home. Like, do you need to talk to your significant other about helping with the kids more, about, you know, and it's so hard, I think, with some of these structural changes too, because even just saying like, do you need to ask, you know, your partner to help more, that takes energy to do. Yes. And that's this, like, that is the cynical nature of burnout, is to get out of burnout, you have to expend energy that you don't have. So my, you know, like recommendation is get really ruthless. Cut, like how I kind of think about burnout too, is like I do the bare minimum essentials of everything that I need, and then anything else is bonus. It's kind of like the spoons theory, if you've heard of that, for like people who have chronic pain and disabilities and stuff. It's like you literally are like, okay. And I do this with clients a lot where I'm like, okay, you have to eat. Like you have to eat a certain amount. But can we make eating easier? Like can you get a meal prep service? Can you just have like smoothies for one of your meals? Can you eat the same thing? Can you wear the same thing every day? Can we reduce decision fatigue as much as possible? You know, if you have the ability to, what can you outsource? Can you get someone to help you with, you know, a couple hours on the weekend so you can recharge, you know, away from your kids? Can you, you know, get Instacart to have your groceries delivered? Yeah. Like thinking about the things that don't add value to your life and just drain you, if you can outsource them, trying to do that and really focus on the bare minimum that you need and dramatically lowering your expectations. Because I also think one thing we don't talk about enough is that the shame that you're adding to being burned out, the judgment you have about yourself, is a huge expense that you do have control over to stop breaking the cycle. It's very hard to do, but that is what's so insidious about it, is then we beat ourselves up about being burned out and not doing enough. And that is a lot of mental energy that we're wasting.
The part specifically where you talked about kind of all of these different ideas of like, how do you make your life easier, right? I think, and this is what I'm about to say, is something that I had to say to myself. So please know, like, I'm holding your hand while I say what I'm about to say. We oftentimes create barriers to change because we are so afraid of, exactly like you said, the effort that it will require to change.
Yeah.
Right. And there are a lot of really creative options that you could think of if you allowed yourself the time to think of them, that could maybe provide some solutions that seem really small, but might be monumental in your day to day. And I think going along with what you said of kind of like the shame, right? If, listen, babes, if shaming yourself worked, you wouldn't be here. If shaming yourself and beating yourself up and speaking shittily to yourself every day made the difference, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't feel this miserable. You wouldn't feel this stressed. You wouldn't feel this overwhelmed. You wouldn't feel this confused. So let's just like put that down for a minute. It's not about getting rid of it. It's not about saying I can't do that anymore. It's that we're not going to listen to only that voice. Mm-hmm. Let's like allow ourselves the chance to listen to a voice that is a little more creative and allows room for some broader options, some broader approaches, and isn't so rigid in how it needs to be applied, right? Because something that's hard too, I think, when you're in the burnout stages, you are so flooded, solutions are overwhelming. Yes. And you can get into a space where it's like, well, that's not going to work because of this, and that's not going to work because of this, because you're so used to things not working. Like, I remember I felt that way. I was so used to everything failing. I was so used to everything not working. People would bring me suggestions and I would be like, shut up. Like, you don't know my life. I would get so mad. When really I was kind of like self-sabotaging and not allowing myself room to really explore like what was available to me. And so, you know, I would really encourage you, if you find yourself like struggling with all these heavy emotions, but then you're like, but I feel bad. That, I get it. I've been there. I felt like a failure. I felt like everybody else on my team was able to manage the job better than I was. And I realized I had different layers of trauma than everyone else. There you
go. Bingo.
I had different layers of trauma than everyone else that made that situation more difficult. And I had to embrace that truth of mine. And that was really powerful for me when I was able to realize like, oh, maybe it's not just me. Maybe I'm just in the wrong system. and that's okay. And I know for my teacher friends, maybe you need a new school, right? Maybe you need a new team. Maybe for my office girlies, like maybe you need a new team. Maybe you need to work under a new boss. Maybe it is a change that big, or maybe it's that stop waking up with 10 minutes only to get ready. Like if you feel that you need more time, make yourself get up and have the time. That's been a huge thing for me that I realized, like in the morning, I have to work out before my clients. If I am going to work out, I have to do it before. It gets me in the right frame of mind and I need to give myself enough time.
Yep.
And I'm also been kind of bad at that. And for my clients that are first in the morning, I'm so sorry. I'm always on at 10:03. Okay. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get better. But I know that I need to do that. And so allowing yourself space to be creative with the solutions, own your truth and your reality that is shaping the situation, and allow yourself to give the effort knowing that it is going to take you where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we also say, and this is a really hard one because literally we talked about this morning, like we've both been talking about being better with boundaries with social media and on our phone and stuff. I've been using Brick and I'm obsessed with it. And Sam has been using Opal. So
yes,
you know, look into those. It was very funny because Sam and I saw the same email this morning. But so Bricked my phone all weekend. I was feeling so much more recharged.
Posted about it in your stories.
Yes, I did. Very, you know, confidently. And I woke up this morning not scrolling on social media. But opened my email and the first thing I saw was an email about, you know, the current state of the world. And it led me to just be like, when is the best time to look at devastating content? When is the best time for me to have an existential spiral about what kind of world my daughter is going to inherit? Is it in the morning so it ruins my day? Is it in the middle of the day so that I can't focus for the rest of the day? Or is it at night because then I can't sleep? I don't know. You tell me.
And that's the really hopeful note we're going to leave this on. No. No. What I would say to that is it goes back to what I was talking about in like the very beginning of the last episode, which is information versus interpretation of information. And also news versus possibility. Mm. Right? And I think sometimes some of these content creators who we follow and we absolutely love, right, in the maybe more political space, the news space, there is an element of they kind of have to play the game, the algorithm game. As responsible as they try to be with it, right, there still kind of is an element of they try to catch your attention. Everybody does it. It's the currency that we live with, right, is trying to get people's attention. And so I sometimes have to take a step back and I will check myself and say, am I in a headspace to read this?
Yeah.
Like, but when I see the title.
The title is the problem.
The title
spiraled me.
When I see the title, I will literally be like, you know what?
I think I need to make maybe a separate email for them. Like a folder.
Ooh, that would be good.
You know, like an email folder.
That would be smart.
So that I'm not just like, bam, hit with it when I'm half asleep in bed.
You just need a picture of a mushroom cloud as the thumbnail. And then you're like, if you're feeling really bold and brave.
Because I did reduce on social media. I've reduced a lot because I was just like, I can't day to day, just like all day be interrupted. No. It is so unproductive and unhelpful. But yeah, I think I need to be more strategic maybe about – because I signed up for a bunch of email subscriptions, which is good. But especially they like go to my work email and it's like, bam, in the morning.
Worst case scenario. Are you ready? Yeah. I had to like aggressively trim down my Substack.
So many amazing people. I want to follow them all.
So many. I know. I wanted to support them so bad. Like Aaron Parnas, baby. Like, I love you so much. You're such a cute little Gen Z newscaster. But I cannot hear you say breaking news 7 times a day.
I think I'm going to go into settings because I think you can change it so that you don't just get emails. You get it like shows up, like you can follow. Yeah, it like shows up in the back end.
You follow instead of like subscribe.
Or like, I think you can change the email settings on the back end. And P.S. subscribe to our Substack if you haven't already.
It's great. We are a little more calm.
We are.
We're not talking about the news. Sometimes, maybe. Depends.
But we will never have a title that says
no
breaking news.
That talks about pronatalism.
I love you, Emily. I just couldn't handle it.
I love you, Emily. So much. We want you on the podcast so bad, but I can't handle it.
I think she would really respect that though. She talks about that. She talks about like make sure you're in the headspace to do this.
Also Jessica Valenti, she is doing the Lord's work with repro rights. And I don't know how she does it because I can't listen.
I know.
I listen.
I love, I subscribe.
I'll save it.
Yeah. I need like a month summary of all the bad things that happened.
Everything that went wrong in March. I do just enough to know what's going on. And then I have to distance because I can't give up. I can't lay down and die. And this amount of information is what causes you to lay down and be useless. Mm-hmm. And a populace in panic is not a populace that can rally and protest. Yes. So if you are in panic mode, that is not a helpful space for you to be.
Yes.
And I need you to take a step back, take 10 deep breaths, turn your phone off. And allow yourself space to like live your life. Like, for example, I have picked up painting.
I know. You're like a really good painter. No, seriously. I'm like the most art challenged person ever. Like, I've gone to like group bachelorettes where we've had to like draw things for fun. And mine is always like 900 times worse than everyone else. Like, I don't understand like shadows or dimensions. I'm very literal. I just like draw circles one and color. Shapes.
Are you doing a sun in the corner? I'm actually right now, I'm painting the folklore cabin.
Oh my God, I love that. Combining two great things.
But yeah, I literally like the other night, I literally like shut off my phone. Mm-hmm. Well, I turned on the Opal app.
I mean, I do think we're kind of circling around also. This is as hard as this is. Like,
yes.
You do have some control over shaming yourself.
Yes.
And really trying to dramatically limit how much information you're taking in.
Yeah.
How many decisions you're making. I love a good, like, I call it like mind shut off activity. Like, I'll listen to like one song on repeat and I'll do a puzzle. Or I will like listen to reruns of something. So I like don't have to pay attention, but I like do something with my hands. Unfortunately, a lot of those things involve like hunching over. They like really hurt your back. Like, puzzling is not good on your back.
No. I have to sit on the floor to do mine. I have like a giant canvas thing that I like lay out. But anyway.
How do we support someone with burnout? Lots of people also ask that.
That's a good one. Twofold. Mm-hmm. One, be patient. Yeah. Okay. Understand that they are in a volatile emotional space and they don't have much to give. So be patient. And boundaries, right? Like, if this is, you know, someone, if you're asking this, I'm assuming this is someone that you know or are close to and have rapport with. And I think sometimes it's okay. Like, I needed people in my life to remind me, like, but are you taking care of yourself? Are you doing what you need to be doing? Are you actually, like, prioritizing what you need? Or are you just, like, assuming that you are, you know? And that was like, a really helpful call-in for me when people would say that. And it was done with love and respect and wasn't aggressive, but people would be like, but are you? You know? And I would have to be like, no. Yeah. But yeah, just be patient, extend them some grace, but also like don't be afraid to check in with a little bit of accountability and kind of be like, well, what have you done today? Like, but also, I guess the third part and final part that I would add to that is do not work harder than them. I think that's the big key. Don't try to step in and fix it because they're just going to butt you to death because they're not ready to do it. But just kind of prod as needed.
I also think not taking it personally. I think it's really hard when someone's struggling with burnout, because especially if it's like your partner or a good friend of yours, it's like they're sick. Like, I wish we would talk about burnout as like it is like an injury, essentially. And you know, like, so they may not be how they used to. Their capacity might be not be the same to spend time with you. They may be slower to respond to things. And I think you treat it just like if someone was injured, what would you do? You would like probably, you know, send them food. You would maybe stop by. Yeah. You would, you know, sometimes asking how can I help isn't helful. It's, you know, I like the strategy a lot of sort of, you know, do something, send them something. And I'm sure, Sam, you could talk even more about this as like someone who has basically been a professional caretaker. But yeah, I think that not taking it personally, being compassionate are two important things for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Just remember to be taking care of you in the process. Learn from other people's mistakes.
And I think the other thing too is, you know, some people ask sort of like, how do I resolve it without feeling guilty? And I think it is, you know, we were talking about shame and guilt, and I think a lot of people are like, I'm going to only do something if I don't feel guilty about doing it. And it's like, you're going to feel guilty regardless. So you should just do it.
Just do it. Just like hold hands with your guilt and be like, we're doing this together. And the first few times I do it, I'm not going to feel great about it because it's new and it's hard and it's uncomfortable and it's putting me first and I'm not used to doing that. So we're just going to go hand in hand.
Yeah. And if we think of it like an injury, like I, you know, I think this, you know, extends to like mental health stuff too, but we treat someone having a physical injury so different than having a mental health issue. And, you know, I think sometimes remembering that, being like, well, if I had broken my foot, would I feel guilty for taking time off? Right? Or if I had done, you know, if I had gotten into a car accident, would I feel guilty about asking for help or being slower to respond? And sometimes framing it that way can help ease guilt. Well, we hope you enjoyed these two parts. We only had set out to do one episode, but you all had so many questions. And as always, we love, love, love hearing from you. So you can email us at podcast@therapyforwomencenter.com, or you can call us and leave us a message at 813-444-8683. We would love to be able to have enough questions that we could do a whole fun Q&A question episode.
And also, as per usual, we are independent. We're doing this on our own little tiny shoulders. And so if you could rate, review, subscribe, anything that you can do to help get the word out, share with your friends, let them know, it would mean the world to us.
Thank you so much for listening. We know there is, as we talked about, so much content in the world. So we are honored that you spent the last episode with us.
Yeah. Thank you.